Is it that bad?
Yeah.
You have a strange echo that sort of an after reverb.
Your inner robot is coming through.
Hey, fans and friends, welcome back to another episode of Mention and Dispatches, the official podcast of the Armchair Dragoons. This is Brant, your host, and we want to make sure that we give credit where credit is due, and we thank our Patreon supporters. We've got a couple of them. We've said, hey, if you support us at a certain level, you get a by-name shout-out on the podcast. And so Joseph Knoll, Treb Curry, Kevin Bertram, Patrick Garrity, thank you guys very much for your continued support of the Armchair Dragoons. Thank you to all of our Patreon supporters, but those are the guys that we've specifically committed to calling out by name for the level at which they've pledged. And if you're interested in helping support Mention and Dispatches, keeping us on the air, patreon.com/armchairdragoons, or if you hit our website, it's a link up in the menu bar. And with that little bit of business out of the way, we do want to introduce tonight's crew. We've got we've got one returning guest and one new voice here on Mention and Dispatches, but they are all here because they are involved. They're the brain trust behind the Connections Online Conference that the Armchair Dragoons are helping sponsor that is coming up in April of 2021 here. And so we have Merle joining us from Columbus. Merle, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fantastic.
And Merle, I know you are a part of the NSDM crew also. What's the official title for you over with the NSDM guys?
Okay, so it's the National Security Decision-Making Game, which hopefully soon will be Inc. because we have submitted our incorporation paperwork as a 501c3. And you can find us on YouTube, and we have a lovely Facebook page.
Yeah, yeah. What's your official title with it all?
I'm the chief cat herder because we're all volunteers. I'm sort of the non-de facto leader of the herd of cats. We have 20-some plus volunteers that help us with different parts of what we do. And we normally appear at the major game conventions like Origins, Gen Con, and Dragon Con, and at academic venues doing economic, political, and military role-playing games so people can learn why did people make a decision like that?
It's almost like you've given that speech before.
It could be.
At least once or twice.
I've only been doing it for 20 years, Brant.
Yeah, 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 I know. All right, and also joining us tonight, the guy who ultimately is at fault for all of this, and that is our good buddy from Dayton, Mr. Chris Weave, is back to join us again here on Mention and Dispatches. Chris, how are you tonight?
I'm doing very good. Thank you for inviting me back.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, we've got shows to do, and if I can find people crazy enough to come do them, I am happy to bring them back over and over and over. And you guys keep saying yes, so, you know, I'm not going to turn down a good thing. So the Armchair Dragoon's involvement in Connections Online came about in sort of a roundabout way, in that I've been involved in Connections off and on over the years, mostly off lately because of work commitments, but I had wanted to get re-engaged in the professional wargaming community, and that was one of the things that we really wanted to start doing more of with the Armchair Dragoons. We were able to reach out to folks like the guys at CGSC and have them come be guests on our podcast, not just the usual suspects, but some of the students as well. We've been able to reach out and bring in folks like our buddy Rex from up there north of the wall, and be able to talk to some of the folks that have worked in some of the think tanks, both in the US and the UK. We were able to bring in some people from the UK to talk to us as well. And so I had broached the idea of, hey, what if we get back to something kind of like Connections used to be, with the war game, the hobby wargaming, professional wargaming cross-pollination, and we do one of those crazy online things, kind of like our online conventions we've been doing. And I was told, hey, you need to call Chris because he's already planning to do something like that. And lo and behold, Chris, you're already planning to do something like that. So talk to us a little bit about Connections as a whole and why you kind of decided Connections Online would be a good idea.
Okay. So I've been going to Connections since 2000. I started at the Center for Naval Analysis in 1999. I just barely missed the Connections conference in 99. It had been like 2 weeks before I started. So I started going in 2000. I haven't made it to every Connections conference since then, but I've been to about three-fourths of them. There's a few that they did when they were associated with a modeling and simulation conference where if you were willing to pay the like $700 to go to the conference, you could spend the, you know, 6 hours that was the official day of Connections. thank you for your most generous offer. I turned that one down.
I just don't see the ROI computing on that one.
Yeah, I didn't either. And I couldn't really convince my bosses at the time that was a good ROI. But I've been to almost all the ones that I could that weren't in that category. Even a bunch of them on my own dime. When I was in my last job, it wasn't part of my job description to do wargaming stuff. And so I was basically covering all my own expenses to go to Connections. One of the nice things about Connections is that the conference has always been free. Connections Online is going to have a little bit of a charge just because we have expenses that we didn't have when we were doing it for free. But it's always been the in-person Connections has always been for free, and I've been part of the planning committee of the in-person Connections for a while. And then I decided that it was time to do an online event. Have you heard of COVID? You guys heard of that?
It's been mentioned a little bit in the news here and there.
So first of all, it became apparent that the last year's Connections conference wasn't going to happen in person. We had to pull the plug on that. And thinking through how I would do an online conference and learning about all the tools, et cetera, one of the things I did early on in this is I realized this is, you know, the classic Chinese crisis, right? It's both danger and opportunity. So I was going to try to make the most of the fact that I was being forced to spend all my time in my apartment. And so one of the things I did is I got pro level accounts to GoToMeeting and Zoom and, you know, a bunch of other tools. I spent about $1,200 in VTC tools last year, just because I wanted to have enough experience to sort of figure out, you know, how to do these things. I got involved in a project called that's ended up being called Starfleet Tactical, where we use we stream to YouTube every week using an app called StreamYard. And so thinking this through, it's like, okay, I've got a vision on how I can do this. I can do this using StreamYard directly to YouTube, use Discord for some ancillary functions along with it, and optimize something for doing it online. Not just, well, we can't have our conference in person, so we're going to, instead of meeting in a room, we're going to meet online. But really, no shit, try to think through the right way to do it online. And there's tremendous opportunities available to us. Like, we can get people that could never make it in person.
Before we get too far along, I do want to make a quick plug.
Go for it.
The Starfleet Tactical series is a lot of fun to watch. I know that the timing of being able to watch it live does sometimes conflict with other things people have going on with their lives. But again, stream to YouTube, you can always go back and watch it again later. I've watched a handful of them after the fact, and they can, even if you're not a big, look, it's built around Star Trek, right? Got it. But even if you're not a big Trek fan, you're just a fan of sci-fi, sort of space combat, space warfare in general. It's a fun series to watch. Plug over, let you go on with connection stuff there.
So, it's a lot of fun to do. And I sort of backed into it. And then my buddy Pat Doyle ended up joining me. And Alec Peters of Axanar fame is the guy who's the mastermind behind it all. But in any event, we're on Starfleet Tactical is on 10 o'clock at night on Saturdays. And I bring that up because the reason why we're on at 10 o'clock at night on Saturdays is because it's a convenient time for the West Coast. So when we were thinking about how to do an online convention, it's like, if we time this right, we can get people on the West Coast. If we time it right, we can get people in Europe. I described the time zones. We're doing 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I described that as Los Angeles to London. That's sort of our target audience, Los Angeles to London, because you don't have to, those are the parts of the world that could attend live and not have to like set their alarm abnormally early or anything like that, right? That's just sort of when it can work. I also realized that we don't have to contain the conference within those hours. We can also try to schedule events outside of conference hours for like gaming events, et cetera, et cetera. So we're trying to do that. We're making it all available on YouTube for free. So if you don't want to pay the registration fee, which is only going to be $5, but if you don't want to pay the $5, you can watch everything on YouTube for free. We're streaming it directly there. It's going to be there for all time. If you want to ask questions of the panels, however, you need to pay $5 and you'll get the access to the Discord server, which you'll have afterwards also. And then once you've, you can ask questions through Discord. So that's how we're going to try to do that. We're going to do all that stuff through Discord.
It's also not lose sight of the fact that that registration fee and access to the Discord server also gets you access to the extended events, not yes. all of which are necessarily going to be recorded or distributed, that many of those are a limited number of seats. Because they're games or demos or instructionals or how-tos. And so there's a limited number of seats that we've got to use the registration gate to sort of keep that head count manageable. And many of those are not going to be recorded for future distribution. Some of them might be, but we're not promising that for those also.
Right. Thank you for pointing out that it's really just the core hours. When I talk about we're putting it up on YouTube, I'm talking about the core hours from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., those sorts of events.
So the other thing I want to highlight here before we go too much further is I'm going to assume that maybe everybody has not read our flyers and don't know much about connections. So there are two important things we need to be sure everybody hears early. One is that Connections has become a lot bigger movement than just a couple of guys, but it started out and its core belief is that it's all volunteers. All of the volunteers and people involved are interested in advancing the art and science of wargaming, particularly about things that deal with real world problems where people can live or die, or there's lots of resources involved. And that's important for everybody to understand. When we talk about Connections and the whole Connections community, you know, we have many volunteers of many nationalities. And right now we're running essentially 5 or 6 conventions a year across the international borders with volunteers that often overlap between the different groups, but all have that common philosophy.
If we just took an inventory off the top of our heads, there's the original Connections, which is now out of necessity branded as Connections US, in order to distinguish it from Connections UK, Connections Netherlands, Connections North, Connections Oz. There was a Connections, was it Norway or Scandinavia or Nordic something or other?
Nordic.
I'm pretty sure there was a Connections France at least once, wasn't
there? There is. Actually, Connections France is linked with the Serious Play movement, and they had about 250 people at their event this last year.
And am I correct in remembering that there was a South American edition somewhere?
There's discussion about a Connections Brazil.
Okay.
So it's not gone live to the best of my knowledge.
Okay. That was my question. I remembered seeing discussions of it, but didn't remember seeing – look, like – I'm not one of the core volunteers. I'm one of those dudes that sort of drops in when he can, which is sort of the very definition of a volunteer, right? But I'm part of the crew that does help get involved in these things. I can't even remember what they all are. That's how crazy this has exploded in the last 10 years. So
the way it started is Matt Caffrey founded the Connections Conference back in 95, 96,
91.
91, oh, even farther back.
Goes back to 91. And originally it was sponsored in part by Air University, because one of the other components about U.S. Connections is that U.S. Connections has always begged, borrowed, and stolen space to hold the convention, so there was no charge for the facility. Generally speaking, what that meant, it is almost always occurred at a DOD-related facility where they do wargaming as part of their mission, and they thought it was valuable enough to play host. And that's one of the ways that's kind of interesting, because Connections is not a military event, but it has a lot of military members, so to speak, and a lot of contractors that support defense or economics or homeland security type things from whatever country the participants come from. But we also have a substantial minority of people that are professional game designers, not all of which are war games as we normally talk about them. So we've seen Academy Games, who've done games on the Road to Freedom and the Underground Railroad. We have Decision Games that have done things like one of their new games is Bleeding Kansas, which they'd love to have me do a bit for, because they're pushing that into the educational community so that kids understand the beginnings of the Civil War. Our Canadian partners have done a lot of stuff with humanitarian issues. And one of the projects that came out of a Connections was a game about how to deal with post-earthquake crises, which is Aftershock, which is now being sold commercially by the game crafters.
Yeah, we've covered Aftershock a couple of different times on podcasts, as you would expect with having had Rex join us on the podcast several different times over the years. We've covered it quite a few times, and we have a review of it on our site. That is definitely one that folks that are Dragoons regulars should be familiar with. I understand that, you know, the wider Connections audience may not be. They damn well should be, but they may not be. You mentioned other ones that have sort of popped up out of the different Connections conferences. I know that Brian Train has showed off Guerrilla Checkers at Connections a couple of times because I was sitting there when he did it. And I remember one of the early Connections that I went to, it wasn't the first one, but it was one of the first ones at NDU, that we were busy working with the NDU on a game about a big counterinsurgency in Colombia. And here in rolls Volko with his prototype of Andean Abyss. And the guys from NDU and I are looking at each other going, well, crap, did they just design the thing for us that we're trying to design for you guys? And it turned out they were two different focuses, foci, focets, whatever. Like, they were focused on two different parts of the conflict. But the coin series got an early baptism by fire at Connect. Like, we've got pictures of Volko and Rex and Skip with his little his drug kingpin fedora on.
And this
playing.
Is one of the real important things you brought out that Connections does. I mean, we basically are a way to connect what a lot of people talk about as silos of excellence. There's all these people thinking about problems in the world and issues, and they're all, a lot of them are really creative, but there's only a few of them in any geographic location. And that was the idea behind Connections, was to bring people together. So one of the constant things we are trying to do, and we've been putting more emphasis on the past couple years, is to bring in people from what we would consider non-traditional defense communities. We've had lawyers come in and talk about how they gain court cases. We've had the Red Cross come in and talk about the kinds of constraints and international challenges that they run into in the real world. You know, I would expect at some point in the future, maybe we'll get Doctors Without Borders or groups like that to talk about how do they plan for the kinds of problems that they could run into. And that's a form of a real world game that has value that wouldn't fit the war game category.
Well, and not just that, but I think part of what, you know, and Matt's been explicit about this over the years, part of what Connections was intended to do and where the name came from is making those connections between the professional community that uses games in their professional development and practice, whether as analytical tools or rehearsal tools or training tools or team building tools or whatever, but using them in a professional context to bring those guys in with the hobby game community. Quite frankly, there's a lot of good ideas in the hobby game community that the pros can learn from. And there's a lot of real world considerations that the pros care about that the hobby guys can use to make their games a little more realistic and more insightful for that hobby audience.
And Matt has been very clear. He stole that idea of fair and square from Burke that used to run the old PBS program Connections.
Yeah, that has always been an explicitly stated message as a part of what Matt had wanted to do. I will tell you that for several years, when I was able to go to Connections for a couple of years in a row, even just that 4, 5, 6 year window where I was there for consecutive years, it did feel as though it had drifted away from the civilians being able to get in. And I think part of that was just the ways in which the military facilities sort of handled things made it tougher for those guys to be a part of stuff, intentionally or otherwise. That's just sort of something that kind of happened.
Well, and a big part of that was after 9/11 happened, because many of our sessions were on or near military facilities. It became harder for non-US nationals to come, and it became a little bit harder for civilians to come because they'd have to jump through a few extra bureaucratic hoops to get permission to go through the gate.
while all that is accurate, keep in mind, I didn't start coming to Connections until 8-9 years after 9/11. And that drift still continued to happen even after that.
Absolutely. And another part of that challenge is, at least in the U.S., although we've had some educational links, we haven't had anybody that's a regular participant that would be willing to sponsor us at a university. Boy, that's a little bit different overseas. Connections North is being sponsored by Rex and McGill, and Connections UK had been sponsored by King's College. So they had those facilities at low or no cost. And that's one of the things that we hope to see more of here, because one of the things we did not want to do as an institution was wind up being beholden to a particular company for sites or facilities, and we haven't solicited money because we don't want to have that color the way the conventions run. It shouldn't be for a company's benefit. It should be for the community's benefit.
This actually is a good place to dive back in, I think, into Connections Online, because all of this was some of the things that were in our minds and we were talking about when we decided it was a good idea to do Connections Online. Because, you know, YouTube is free, right? As it is, we're charging just a little bit because there's certain services that we want to use that aren't free in order to make it happen. So when we do all that stuff, you know, but we're not breaking even on it. We're not going to break even at all on it.
Yeah, I mean, Connections is always, in every one of its iterations, been a labor of love. It's people that recognize the value of wanting to improve the art and science of this tool set. And that's what drives it. I mean, we all lose lots of money and lots of time, or maybe not lose, but invest.
Yeah.
You know, so that we make a difference. And a lot of what we're doing now in the last 7 or 8 years has been trying to build something that's survivable. There's a succession plan where all these old white guys who were the ones that most governments hired get replaced by all the young people who can do the work, regardless of color or ethnicity. And because of the nature of our community, fortunately, and I'd like to say this in gamer terms, gamers are the geeks and freaks of society, and we tend to be very diverse and very welcoming. So it's not the question of whether or not there are 5 girls or 3 Chinese or in terms of ethnicity or Ukrainian or German or whatever. It's, you know, that they have to know about us and they have to have the same interest. And if they do, they're more than welcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but basically, Connections has been tried to be aimed at anybody who takes wargaming seriously from a professional aspect. So that means people who design wargames for DOD, people who design wargames for hobby, people who design wargames for the rest of the world, people who use wargames or maybe just want to learn more about wargames because they're going to be a consumer of wargames. We usually get at the Connections US conference for a long, long time, and there's still a bunch of that. Like day one would always be the newbie, you know, people coming to their first connection, people who had not been really exposed to professional wargaming before. So we had an entire room full of people that basically told the same story. Yeah, I just got this position and I'm told that I have to, that my job is going to include some wargaming stuff and I don't know anything about wargaming. And they pointed me to your conference as a way that I can come and learn about wargaming.
And a good part of it is so that people start to see the breadth and depth and length of gaming, because there are a lot of DOD gamers that do large things with large groups of people where they sort of look like a variant on a military exercise. And then there are other folks that are doing research issues about how would we use this new thing that we've got, this new toy. And then there are others that look into the social dynamics of how people communicate. All of those things are valid, along with stuff that looks at how you come up with mathematical models that can help you do it faster and better, and whether or not you can build a computer tool that will let you use a map or let you communicate better, or can track it so that you can say, where was the key point somebody made that decision? All of those are part of the thing. And when we talk about both the hobbyists and the professionals getting in the same room, there's an overlap in the language, but it's not identical. So the newbie days was, this is how you understand the DOD people, and this is how the DOD people understand the hobby.
Chris, you had mentioned this early on when you and I first started talking about getting the Dragoons engaged with Connections Online. Look, we are a hobby-focused strategy gaming website, and we do incorporate content for the professional world, but quite frankly, more often than not, it is about informing the hobbyists of what's going on in the professional world. Mm-hmm. Because when we bring on somebody like the guys from CGSC to talk about the Wargame Design Program there, or when we had Matt and you, Chris, on here talking about Matt's book on wargaming, quite frankly, the pros largely are aware of the things that you guys are here to discuss. And it is more informing our primary hobby audience of what's going on in the professional world and how some of those things might be of interest to the hobbyists. And I would like to ultimately be able to bring some of those professionals into that hobby community, if for no other. And it's a tough line to walk. And I've talked with some of the pros about this. Chris, you probably had some of these similar conversations in your day job. If your job in the DOD is to be a wargamer, there's two ways you can look at it. One is you just love wargaming, and the fact that you get to do it at work is kind of cool because you're going to do it anyway, whether they pay you to do it or not. Right. And that's the Mike Markowitzes of the world. Right. Mike always introduces himself at every Connections talk. Hi, I'm Mike Markowitz and I'm a wargamer. And Mike's playing stuff, whether he's being paid to do it or not. But you have other folks that wargaming is their job and they don't want to be taking their job home and trying to call it fun. And so I don't necessarily want the Dragoons to, you know, like try and force feed hobby gaming to professionals. Like, we are certainly not high minded enough to think that we can in any way influence stuff to that degree. But I do want to make it a friendly and welcoming place for the professionals to be able to come pay a visit to the hobby wargaming world, hopefully largely asshat free, because that is a problem that some of the other hobby wargaming world has.
Yeah.
But where they can have reasonable adult conversations about the wargaming thing that we all love and be able to sort of get better informed about what's happening in the hobby world and maybe take some of that information back to their day job with them and help make their day job, you know, a little better, a little more pleasant, a little more useful and meaningful for them. Maybe that's a little too fanciful on my part, probably. I've been known to dream big and not fulfill them. Like, that's sort of the story of my life, right? But I think that's a role I want us to be able to play in all of this.
Yeah, and I think that's perfectly reasonable. I mean, there's really two different types of gamers I've discovered in DOD, and you sort of laid it out. There's those of us that are gamers first, and we just happen to work at DOD. And then there's the folks that really sort of, you know, it is their job at home, and they don't bring it home. And one of the really kind of differences between those two is that the folks who don't do it for fun, you know, it may not, I don't want to make it sound like there's one set of guys that are really good and then there's the other guys that are slackers. That's not it at all. But that having been said, the folks that do it for fun outside of the job have a lot broader perspective on exactly what gaming is and what they can do with it. And things like that. So, I mean, I know people that they've got one tool that they use for wargaming, and they're really good at that one tool. But they think of gaming as being using that tool, using that application, using that particular methodology. They don't think about all the other things that are out there.
And that's an important point, because the hobbyists tend to be more diverse. And yes. The guys that are professionals tend to work for an organization that's a one-trick pony. And that's an overstatement by a mile, but it is more true than not.
Yeah, and you know, even like when I was up at the Naval War College does a particular type of gaming, which, you know, which is not to say everything falls into that bin. It
usually involves boats and water and, you know, guys in funny hats.
No, it doesn't necessarily. It doesn't. It can, but it doesn't have to. They're really big on seminar war games. They're really big on games where if you're touching a computer, you're looking at reference materials, or you're filling out filling out move sheets, or you're maybe like a PowerPoint slide that you're going to brief or something like that. But the game, you know, my former boss, Peter Perla, says the game takes place in people's heads, right? The game takes place in your head. Everything else is just a way to sort of set the stage to make it easier for the game to take place in your head. And so at the War College, computers are used in the same way that computers are used in your office. Now, other places in DOD, like the place I'm working now, 9 times out of 10, if you say war game, you might as well just put the word computer in front of it, because everybody assumes that war game means computer war game, right?
And let me add one more example. I mean, one of the reasons that my group got invited to NDU is because we were different. And what NDU was doing at that time when they talked war game was, it was like a conference meeting. They'd say, we've got this crisis, and you 9 people should study up on an aspect of the crisis and come back with a position paper on what the boss should do, like he was the president. And that's all they were doing for a number of years. And we are a group with our NSDM group that does free adjudication of some of the same kinds of events, where they act like actors on both sides and try to get into the motivations and the decision-making process that's used, rather than just giving a briefing paper. And that was all they did for a number of years. They had done other stuff before, but all those skills were lost in the generational or the age cohort change in the organization.
The tools that you use affect how you approach problems. If you only have a couple of tools in your toolkit, you know, there's that old saying that if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. That's really true. If all you have is, you know, like Command Modern Operations, everything looks like it's a time-based, continuous run, you know, combat problem, right? But if you can put together a seminar game, if you can have Merle and his people come in and design something for you, you know, sometimes it might look like a board game. Sometimes it might look like a role-playing game.
And sometimes the best game you can have is a miniatures game with tanks and buildings and stuff like that. Depends on what you're trying to look at.
And when
the
I
best
was
game court, you can have is always one with tanks. Let's just go ahead and establish that as a ground truth.
When I was in Newport, we did a couple of games where the idea was that we were looking at command and control structures, not necessarily for, you know, going out. I'm not talking about tactical. I'm not talking about small unit tactics. I'm talking about how do you design an organization? And so what we did is, there's a proposed structure. We printed it out. Big sheets of paper all along the walls of the game cells. We set up game cells to be parts of this larger organization, and we threw scenarios at them. And so they had to sort of figure out how to communicate, et cetera. They're actually walking their way through the various communication channels, the various wiring diagrams, right? They're trying to make this work. And they've got the structure up on the board. So as the entire idea behind the game is to put them in something that will get them thinking in a way that, you know, it's easy to say, oh, we'll just sit around a table and brainstorm about it. Yeah, okay, that doesn't work. I mean, it's useful under certain circumstances, but you always get something by doing something immersive, putting people into it. Anybody who's ever designed a game can tell you a story about the time where they came up with something really, really cool and worked on it for a while, and then they went to play test it and they realized in 30 seconds it doesn't work, because it didn't, you don't see the problems until you actually sit down and play it. The same is true of these other scenarios. So we put the big schematics up on the wall, throw scenarios at them. They're having to work through problems, and they just would walk up to the wall and make notes on the schematic. You know, this guy should be talking to this guy. They shouldn't be in different parts of the organization. You've got this guy in the wrong part of the org chart.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so you look at it and you go, org charts, what's that about warfare? That's everything. One of my instructors up in Newport, when I was up there, I did the faculty by day, student by night thing. One of my instructors up there had been in the Royal Navy during the Falklands War. He'd been a young lieutenant, right? He was, first major at sea assignment. And his boss was utterly fixated on the org chart, on making sure that people got the org chart right. And when he asked about it, he said, look, if you get the, if you got good people, and we do, if you get the org chart right, everything else will work out. If the right people are talking to the right people, if the right people are answering to the right people, everything else will work out fine. But you got to get the org chart right.
And sometimes the org chart has to be dependent upon the skill and training, and sometimes based on the actual individual, because the org chart of how to invade Europe in World War II would look a lot different for Montgomery than it would for an Eisenhower.
Yeah. It can. And then you also have to take it. That's actually a good example, because you also have to take into some account some political aspects of it. Right. You know, best military guy, you know, was he the best strategist, the best tactician? I don't know, but he was the best guy at holding together a multinational alliance. There's a reason why Eisenhower got picked for that job. And it's because Eisenhower could deal with Montgomery and Patton and De Gaulle and Churchill and all those guys.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to something else that you said earlier, Brant, about talking about the Dragoons and their role in all of this. It's very useful to talk to the hobbyists in all of this. I don't want anybody to ever come away going, oh, they're just hobbyists, because there's a lot of wonderful things out there in the hobby world. And those of us that play both sides of it, right? Those of us that are, that do gaming for fun, understand that there's things that we can learn from the hobby world. Sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, I saw an interesting mechanic, or, you know, we could reskin that game. I was involved in a project at CNA where we literally took a game that was originally supposedly a game about, really just skinned as a game about medieval jousting tournaments, and turned it into the combat mechanism for a game about the World War I naval arms race. Is it a combat model? It's not so much model. It's more of a game, but the building part was the important part. We just knew that they had to have a game to play at the end, because there was nothing that would frustrate these guys more than to have them build a fleet and then say, and now we're done. So you have to have a battle, right?
And having seen that prototype, you know, the other thing I can say about it is that it helped bring into focus the relationships between different programs. And yes, although it did not reflect accurately all of the proportionality, it allowed people to investigate and understand that propulsion was part of what went into developing a naval strategy. And, you know, aerial observation was a component that went into strategy. And, you know, armor plating was a component that went into strategy and your development of your fleet and your battle line and how you were going to make it work. And you can take different approaches. It's just like we know prior to the Second World War, the Japanese put a lot of emphasis into carriers, and we started to become aware of carriers and make a few, but we didn't go whole hog until we saw the devastation at Pearl Harbor.
And for what it's worth, that game is a game called Sea Powers. And as soon as we're done running Connections Online, my next major project is to go back and blow the dust off those files again. Because Chris Carlson and Larry Bond of Admiralty Group Games want to publish it. And so I'm going to do a new edition of that game and publish it. But right now I'm busy gearing up for the conference. So one other thing about the hobby work thing is for all of you out there who think that those of us that get paid to do games in our day job, that we won the lottery, you're right. But in addition to that, though, there's an important thing to understand about, and anybody who's ever turned their hobby into their job understands this. It is not the case that it automatically happens that if you turn your hobby into your job, you stop liking your hobby. It does, however, that does happen to some people. It does, however, change your relationship to your hobby. I'm sure if you're a professional musician and you're just listening to music, you can enjoy it a great deal, but you're hearing things that the rest of us aren't hearing. If you're a cinematographer, you're seeing things that the rest are not seeing. I find, you know, I've done this turning my hobby into my job thing a couple of times, even if sometimes I don't get paid for the job. And it does sort of change your relationship with it. it's hard to sit and play a game. I can still really, really enjoy games. I do really, really enjoy games, but it's hard to sit and enjoy a game without immediately start redesigning it in your head.
Yeah, you sort of have to have that challenge between this is a game for fun, and if it's serious, oh my God, this and this and this and this is wrong.
And the same thing sort of happens with anything that you get turned into where you sort of reach that next level of proficiency at that it changes the relationship does. I do know people that once they started getting paid to do gaming, they just weren't, you know, they stopped playing games for fun. Now, the people I hang out with, you know, Peter Perla was my boss. I spend time with Mark Herman and some of Mark's people on a regular basis. You know, Ed McGrady from CNA. They all still play games a lot for fun. They still do that. They still go to gaming conventions. They still really enjoy playing games. I probably don't play as much as I used to, but in part that's as much because I haven't been part of a social group like I was when I was in the DC area. I had a very steady gaming group in the DC area.
So I want to add another point about participating in connections, whether it's online or live. I work for DoD. It's true. I freely confess my guilt. I spent over 35 years as a DoD civilian, and I never played a war game for work. I've been a gaming addict since I was in high school. I started running game conventions when I was in high school. I ran game conventions when I lived 2.5 hours from the city I was running them in because I'd gotten a job. I'm a nut, but I'm basically a hobbyist that moved into connections because my hobby became very serious. And I started seeing these people. And then I got to talking to these people. And, you know, when Chris talks about there are some people we know that all they do all day is hug themselves because their passion is what they're getting paid to do. I've discovered that there's all kinds of really amazing people that now know me on a first name basis that I worship the books they wrote in high school because I was an early adopter. And it really scares me sometimes, the people that know me by a first name and I can have an intelligent conversation on with and value that conversation that where I added a point. And that's one of the joys of something like connections. There's no institutional barriers between you and other people who are really your tribe in their heart of hearts.
I think that's definitely a good point is that it I don't want to say it levels the playing field because that implies that it started out as inherently uneven and that's not necessarily the case. I think it levels the perceptions of the playing field in that when you first walk in, you're sort of, oh my God, who are these guys? And then it rapidly changes to where, you know, you're you are a valued voice in the room. You guys have been making fun of me about this for like 10, 15 years. So I'm used to it at this point, but I've been the kid brother in the room for just about every time, every one of these types of operations, whether it was connections, whether it was Origins War College, whether it was involvement at NDU, like anything in the professional field that I've been involved in, I've been the kid brother in the room. And I've been the kid brother in the room for 15 years now, which tells you, again, going back to the earlier point of we need more younger folks to like come get involved and start being a part of this. Because if 15 years have gone by and I'm still the kid brother in the room, that's a problem. But the folks at Connections were always very good about not making me feel like the kid brother in the room. And part of that started with Matt because, you know, showing up at Origins, I was there originally as a game publisher and a game designer. And Matt said, hey, you've got some cool ideas. Why don't you come talk to the Origins War College? Okay, sure. Like, I didn't know enough to say no. And I'm glad I didn't. And so the first talk I ever gave at the Origins War College was about Fog of War and wargaming. And part of it grew out of an article that I was writing for a website at the time. And I figured, all right, you know, I'll use the talk at Origins to help further develop the article because I'll get some good feedback out of there. And I get in there and I get up there to go give the talk and there's two people in the room and I'm thinking, oh crap, great. Like there's two people in the room. I'm not going to get any great conversation out of this. It's Charles Camps and like somebody, I don't think it was John Prados. I know he was at Origins that year, but it's like Charles Camps and some other great designer whose games I played growing up. And these guys are here to listen to me. Like what the hell? But they were there to listen to me. They're like, well, this guy must have something meaningful to say about this. So they wouldn't have given him a speaking slot. And I think that's kind of true, is that folks are willing to hear what you've got to say, regardless of what kind of initials are after your name, regardless of what job title's on your business card. If you've got a passion for what you're doing, folks want to hear what you have to say and how you got to where you are now. And I think that's kind of cool. And I think that indirectly probably supports Merle, what is likely your next pitch, which is, hey, folks, get involved.
Gee, how nice that you had that segue. Gee, folks, get involved. You know, I can't say enough about this, because Connections is the kind of group that you are judged by your contribution and judged by your intellect and the kinds of discussions that you have. Not necessarily about that you're right, but that you can intelligently have the discussion, and it provides a thought provoker for the guy you're talking to if he's brilliant and you're not. I mean, the thing is, I've never considered myself an expert on virtually anything, but I'm a really talented amateur, and I've learned a tremendous amount from all the people I've met at Connections. And there are a few of them that thought I gave them something to consider that they hadn't thought of, because I have a really weird background. And we love to have new people show up and to volunteer. And you don't have to volunteer for 20 hours in the core of the convention. You can do an hour a month, or help with a brochure, or, you know, help carry drinks at the event. But the whole thing is, you get to participate, and you get past that entry cost, which is primarily emotional and intellectual, because you have to get past the palsy of the wrist to knock on the door and come join in. You know, we'd love to have anybody who's interested. And if you are, poke the Facebook page, which is Connections Wargaming, and send a PM in, and I'll have a conversation with you and say, here's stuff that we're looking for, and gee, whether you want to do something we're already doing or something new, come on in.
And for Connections Online, one of the things that that I sort of decided early on that I wanted to do with this is that I wanted to be at least a little experimental. So the entire conference is kind of an experiment. Let's see if we can do a conference online, and let's see if people are interested in it. So the current plan is to try to do something on a regular basis, like every year. You know, it might turn out that once people are done with COVID, that there isn't any real interest in an online convention. We'll figure that out when we get there. The structure of the conference, you know, I didn't want to just take a regular conference and just do it through Zoom or something like that. I tried to optimize the design for the online environment we're going to be doing it in. That includes things like we're not doing scheduled breaks, because at any point you can get up and walk away from your computer and go use the restroom or go make a sandwich or whatever. You don't need me to tell you when you can do that. So we're taking advantage of just, you know, starting on the hour when we do stuff. And we figured that we'll give the panel discussions a lot of time, and that if they naturally peter out, you know, eventually people will wander away, and that's a perfectly fine thing. And if you miss something because you decided that you really did need to take a break, you can always go and watch it on YouTube later. We're also trying to set up at least one panel, hopefully three panels, that are of a format of pointing to videos online. And then, so the idea is that beforehand, you would go and watch these videos. The audience watches these videos, and then there's sort of a panel moderated discussion about it afterwards. We're looking at one, especially about the Western Approaches Tactical Unit.
So you're giving people homework.
So we're giving people homework. And so it's like, you know, go watch a couple of videos on YouTube or something like that, and then come back and, you know, we'll have some people talk about it. So, now,
just wanted to make sure it was clear that people understood you were giving them homework.
People also need to understand something else that's really important. If you don't want to think, you shouldn't come to Connections, because you will make your brain hurt.
There's a lot of truth to that. And you know, I one of the things that I've said multiple times is I'm a big believer in the idea of doing something experimental and seeing if it works. And I think it is a perfectly valid answer to say the experiment was a success. We learned never to do that again.
Yep.
So
our various website attempts at some things over the years are a very loud testament to that. We have tried and experimented with a variety of different types of content over the years. And sometimes what we learned is that was dumb.
Well, so good.
Or not that it was dumb, or it was ill-timed, or it was inappropriate for what we really wanted to do, but we shouldn't have done that. So,
well, to foot stomp that, one of the other things that we took into account when we were talking about how to set this particular event up was what we went through with Connections USA last year. Because we were very fortunate in that the sponsor that was going to provide us with space went out and hired a contractor that was professional at running Zoom conferences. And that really let us continue with the tradition of having an annual Connections meeting in the United States. And because of the model that was chosen, we did basically continuous broadcast from the beginning to the end of the day with hour-long presentations that were back to back to back. That was really great. It was a fantastic experience, and it killed about a half a dozen of us to do it because the amount of labor to have a continuous broadcast with over 63 speakers was impressive. And without professional full-time help, even if there were only two of them, we wouldn't have been able to do it. And now we're doing this entirely with volunteers again, you know, because we don't have somebody with deep pockets. We're financing it all ourselves. And because of that, it's more modest in its approach. And we can run this event essentially with about seven people behind the screen, and then it's the presenters. So that's really nice because it makes it manageable. And we can reach an audience that's huge because by any standard, you know, Connections USA last year drew orders of magnitude more people than we've ever been able to have in one place because all the people who couldn't afford to come came. And that's one of the things we're hoping to replicate with the online model. It means people would otherwise see, we get to see now and talk to.
Yeah. And not only, I'd even put it a slightly different way. I see this conference out there, right? And, you know, the conference itself may be free, but I've got to travel to DC and pay for a hotel or something in DC. And, you know, for those of us that are fortunate enough to have wargaming as part of their job description, you know, and I can talk my boss into paying for that, that's one thing. But if I'm just somebody who is not in a position like that, or, you know, I'm trying to bootstrap an organization and we don't have the budget to do it or whatever, and I don't know anybody who's been to this conference to sing its praises to me, you know, I'm trying to decide whether I'm going to go to this conference and potentially spend, you know, several hundred dollars based upon a flyer. I don't know if that's a good investment or not. Put it online and it's like, okay, this is the Connections conference. Let me go see whether this is useful or not.
And the other part of that is if you're a serious designer or serious about understanding how design impacts how you view historical or potential events, because we're all about the past, the present, and the future, okay, realize it could be just like our good friend Brian Train explains. Brian has a full-time job. It is not to have a thing to do with gaming, and gaming is his hobby, and he has several published professional designs. And the way he says it is, sometimes my hobby pays for itself.
Yes. If your hobby can pay for itself, that's good. As somebody with a couple of hobbies that haven't paid for themselves, I copy edited and wrote a chapter in a book that got published. And my comment is that I got paid the princely sum of, I think it was like $871.63, and it only cost me about $4,000 to earn that.
So before we close out, because I think we're getting close to Brant's time, I want to do one more plug, shameless plug, okay? For those of you who are hobbyists that are listening in and want to understand a little bit more about how the military does things and some of the history of the professional wargaming world, you should go check out Matt Caffrey's book on wargaming. And there just happens to be a Facebook page that has the link, and you could be one of 19,000 people that have downloaded this free book provided to you by Matt working for the U.S. government as a loyal and devoted servant of you all. Because he's got no money for it. He doesn't get any kind of, publishing benefit. But it has been downloaded over 19,000 times. And it is the most downloaded publication ever from the Naval War College's print section, the Newport Papers area. So if it's the most downloaded thing they ever had, it might be worth you looking at it.
Well, and keep in mind, too, longtime listeners will remember that two or three seasons ago, we did have Matt on. It was right around the time the book released. We did bring Matt on for an extended podcast with Matt and Chris, and Matt's wife in the background actually got picked up on the mic a couple of times, who joined us for an extended discussion of the book and how it came about and how it grew into the project that it was. Because from the time I met Matt, he was working on that book, and that had to be 12 years or so.
It's a lifetime project almost for him.
Oh, God, yes.
He started that book in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of the challenge with writing a history book about something that's still going on is it will never be done, right? We can write the history book about the American Revolution. It's over. It's a little tougher to write a history book about something that's still happening. It's like writing a history of rock and roll.
Merle and I were over at his house yesterday, and he was talking about working on the next edition of the book.
Yeah, of course he was. He can't help himself. It's an addiction.
Absolutely. And the next edition will probably be privately published, because getting anything published in the government system is a trick. Not that he'll ever make money on it, but there are some folks talking about doing print on demand for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, of course, Matt is the godfather of connections. We want to make sure we absolutely acknowledge that without Matt, none of this ever happens. He is not the primary guy driving the train behind Connections Online, which is why we drafted Chris and all this, because this is all Chris's bright idea. And that's how we've got Chris on here. And then Merle, because like me, Merle was crazy enough to volunteer to help Chris pull this off. That's why you've got the three of us talking about Matt's baby and how it's grown and morphed and mutated.
Absolutely nothing wrong with me. It's the two of you I worry about.
if that's what helps you sleep at night, Merle, then go with that. Guys, I think we've covered pretty much the majority of the ground we needed to cover for Connections as a whole and how Connections Online fits into this space. Chris, I know we don't have a final schedule nailed down, but do you have a bit of a preview we could throw at some people of some of the things that we are expecting to happen, even if we don't have the specific date and time yet?
Sure. The general theme of the conference, and I just realized we never actually talked about the general theme of the conference, is distributed wargaming. And, you know, it seems to be the all the rage these days in the era of COVID. And so we're following what I call the 40-60 rule of connections, which is 40 to 60% of the topics of any given connections conference are generally about that year's topic. So the rest of the stuff, it can be all over the map. I already mentioned that we're trying to put together a panel presentation or a panel discussion on the Western Approaches Tactical Unit. This is the group that was a Royal Navy unit that manned the Western Approaches, and they were fighting the U-boat battle, and they did it through wargaming. Was part of it is that they used wargaming as a tool to figure out where the tactics were going, to develop new tactics and to train the convoy personnel in order to win the Battle of the Atlantic. We're also looking at a panel on that. I don't know what the exact title we're going to come up with it is, but it's basically long-term distributed hobby gaming. Brant's putting this one together. And Brant, if you want to talk a little bit about that, I'll turn it over to you real quick.
Yeah. So one of the things that the DOD does reasonably well, and I say the DOD, the larger national security world, does reasonably well, is that when they actually get a senior sponsor to care, they are very good about marshaling significant resources to all mass fires on a specific event and make that event happen. And you can get a lot of really good, highly focused attention in a 96-hour window to pull off something pretty major if you need to. The challenge that a lot of folks have is they may not have a 96-hour window where they can get everybody together, or more pertinently, they may want to take a longer time to explore a larger topic than trying to bring a bunch of people together and run something over the course of weeks or months. And you're just not going to get a whole bunch of people in one place to be able to do that. And what we have found, though, is that there are a variety of hobby gamers, including some of the Dragoons, that have managed to maintain and sustain extended distributed games over the course of, quite frankly, multiple years. We just wrapped up. It was a few months ago before Christmas. We wrapped up a major Kriegspiel online, double blind, fully, you know, separated Kriegspiel that ran for over 2.5. I mean, there have been marriages that didn't last as long as this Kriegspiel did. And we successfully pulled this off with a little more than a dozen different participants playing the Napoleonic campaign in Bavaria in 1809, I think it was. You know, this lasted for a while. It was kind of cool. We've got other folks that have had extended role-playing campaigns that have lasted for multiple years being played online through a distributed format. And so what are some of the lessons these guys have learned from their extended distributed games, these long-term games that could be of use for folks in the DoD who want to take advantage of a much larger time horizon than DoD and national security events ever try to leverage?
So in addition to that, we're also, Matt Caffrey's trying to put together a panel of the national chairs from all the different connections conferences to give people an overview of sort of what everybody else in the world is doing, because connections stopped being a conference and it sort of turned into a movement. Not orchestrated on Matt's part. It started off with the Brits, some Brits saying, yeah, I think we want to do a conference about that's basically the same thing as Connections. Would you be okay if we called it Connections? And Matt went, well, sure. And then Rex Brynen did the same thing. And next thing you know, there's one in the Netherlands and there's one in Oz and all the rest of it. So Matt's pulling together a panel of basically all of those folks. Sebastian Bay, who's the faculty moderator at the Georgetown University Wargaming Society, who's running an excellent, excellent speaker series. I basically said, Sebastian, I'd like you to showcase some of your people. If you want to pick current students, that's great. If you want to pick the best stuff from past students, that's great. However you want to put it together. So I don't know exactly what that one's going to look like, but, you know, having watched a set of really good presentations, some of which were from people like me that he brought in from the outside world, but a lot of them were some of his students. So I'm very hopeful of that. Merle, you're putting together a panel on distributed wargaming experiences, right?
Right. Basically, we're going to talk about how you control games with significant numbers of people, like more than 20, maybe as many as a couple of hundred, and the kinds of tools that can be used to do that. Right now, we've got a presentation under development about how Discord can be used to control a game, and on how Slack has been used to control a game with large numbers of players. And we hope to add a couple other features before we get to a final.
And Stephen Downs Martin is running a panel on the Distributed Wargame Working Group from the CISO organization, which is the Systems Interoperability Standards Organization. And so there's a wargaming group under that, and then there's a distributed wargaming working group under that. And so Stephen is the chair. He's a longtime Connections guy, and he's putting together a panel on that to sort of present with the sort of stuff that we've been talking about in that particular working group. And,
was Stephen's goal to have the longest possible panel name?
I think it was a matter of pride, yes.
I think it just kind of worked out that way. But that's probably, you know, I don't know how much time I'm going to spend with my camera on, because I'm going to be running StreamYard for a bunch of this. I will be doing some emceeing duties, I expect. I'll do the welcome message at the very beginning. But I'm going to spend a lot of time just sitting in the chair, running people through the procedure of, you know, marshaling people backstage on Discord and then moving them over to StreamYard and stuff like that. So it's going to be a busy 4 days for the three of us doing it. And I'm not sure if I'm actually going to be in front of the camera at all, but that's probably where
I think it's probable that we will all spend more time orchestrating than we will watching, and we'll go back and look at all the cool things that we helped make happen rather than enjoy them while they're going on.
Yeah. And so we've, there's been a couple of other ideas for some really good panel ideas that we had that haven't panned out, just because other people have been busy. They're just unavailable at the time period. We did manage to pick a time, which is 12 through 14 April, that just didn't work for about a half dozen people. They're just like, yeah, they wanted to be here and they couldn't. Pete Pellegrino from the Naval War College is one of those folks. I had high hopes for something, but my plan is that the panel that I had, that I was hoping that Pete would be able to put together for us, that we'll just do that next year. So
I also want to throw in a quick plug for we do have some of the extended events already planned, although we may not have an exact date and time nailed down. We do know some of them, and we are going to have folks that attended our conference, the ACDC, our convention back in January, may remember the guys that did the board game boot camp to help teach folks how Discord and Vassal and Tabletop Simulator can interact for online wargaming. They are going to be back, and they're going to be running stuff on the weekend for us. So we're going to have those guys available as some of the extended events. And again, the extended events are likely to be limited seating. So it's one of those jump on it when you can kind of a thing. We've got another gentleman who's going to be using Harpoon as sort of a presentation tool to show using Harpoon as kind of a walkthrough for part of the Falklands campaign and exploring using that interactive map tool, not necessarily playing the game, but just being able to use that presentation tool to map out and demonstrate sort of some of the things that happened and some considerations around that. I suspect there will be at least two and probably as many as five different after hours game events using Tabletop Simulator that folks will have an opportunity to jump into. Anybody that's been watching our Saturday Night Fight series over the years knows what these things look like and what they are. And so it's not really, we're not trying to replicate the ACDC, but the opportunity to sit down and play some different kinds of games for people in the professional world to get some exposure to those hobby games, we think is an important part of Connections. We want to make sure that happens also.
And we should emphasize that we're not just talking about events that take place like after hours during 12 through 14 April. What we're talking about is starting on the 10th of April, which is the Saturday beforehand, and extending all the way through the weekend, not the weekend after the game, but the weekend after.
We're starting the Saturday before and ending the Sunday after. So there's
right.
So it's a 9-day window.
It's late in the day. I've been at work since 6 a.m. this morning, and I shouldn't try to do calendar math in my head. It ends up being a 9-day window of events. We purposely extended it beyond the realm of the conference itself, so that there's plenty of time for people to set up events. If somebody in Australia decides that they want to run an event at 2 a.m. U.S. time, by all means. Anybody else who wants to run an event, by all means, run an event, send it to us, and we'll add it onto the calendar.
And the other thing to highlight is, because of the tool set that we've got behind the scenes with what Armchair Dragoons has done with the registration, we can handle a lot of additional events and even events that only have a half a dozen people, which is part of why we extended the period, so that if you want to be in more than one of them, they're not all compressed in two or three nights and the seating's only six seats, but somebody could run the same event every night with six seats for a week, and then there'd be a lot more exposure. So we were trying to encourage people to do what they want to do and be as active as they can.
You find me the person that wants to run the same event every night for seven nights, and I'm going to show you somebody that's got issues.
So in other words, you've issued a challenge?
You know what? Go for it.
You realize I'm not gonna, the Iron Lecturer Award from Origins War College, right?
I am not going to say no to additional programming on behalf of Connections Online, but I think that person is nuts, whoever that person might be.
So we won't talk about my 10 hours of continuous lecture at Origins. Okay.
Hey, look, if you want to engage in a filibuster, that is fine. I'm not advocating on its behalf.
I'm not merely ready for suicide this week, but maybe next time.
I am merely promising to make fun of you for it.
Well, that's okay.
I was part of a science fiction convention that was organized. We designed a science fiction convention that didn't look like a normal science fiction convention. It was almost all presentations. And it ran from 10 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock at night, if I remember correctly, on Saturday. And then we also had stuff on Friday and Sunday. So it was, yeah. And I was part of a large chunk of those presentations. I think I did 4 of them over that time frame. So, yeah.
So you're nuts, too, is what you're talking about.
Yeah, I will point out I have been called worse by better than you.
I don't doubt it. All right. At this point, it's descended into a bit of a yuck fest on our part, and we're probably just driving the audience nuts. So, Connections Online, the core events are, they're 12 to 14 April, with the extended events starting on the 10th and wrapping up on the 18th. So they're going to start the Saturday before and end the Sunday after. As Chris has noted, the core events, the primary presentations, the keynotes, the panel discussions, those things will run between 10 and 4 U.S. East Coast time, which gives you a wide window for folks going to have to wake up a little early on the West Coast. Folks can stay up a little late with their tea out in England. And folks in Australia, sorry, you just got screwed. You're going to have to work vampire hours because that's the best we can do. But the extended events that operate outside of those core event windows, we could take all kinds of crazy hours. So folks, get in touch with us if it's something you would like to get involved in. The core events, as Chris has noted, are being broadcast for free on YouTube. You get to watch for free, and that's no problem. If you want to interact, if you want to be able to register to be involved in the extended events, those require registration through the conference, and we are handling that registration through the Armchair Dragoons website. So if you go to armchairdragoons.com/connections, or just hit the Dragoons website and it's linked up at the top in the menu, we have a dedicated subsite set up specifically for Connections. As the schedule gets nailed down, we're going to start releasing the pieces of the schedule that folks will be able to see and register for there. And as the extended events continue to get added, folks will have the opportunity to go in through that registration and log in through there. By the time this podcast is released, registration is already open, so that's not really an issue. You'll be able to get in and go register and plunk down your couple of shekels and be able to sign up for the specific events that you are interested in. For what it's worth, some folks like me like to collect the badges from all the different conferences they've been in. I've got a giant collection of them hanging off of my closet up here in my office. Badges for a virtual convention are goofy. We know that. However, the software we're using to deal with the registration does give you the opportunity to print a badge if you want it. So if you really want to print a badge and put it in a badge holder and wear it on a lanyard while you're at the conference so you feel a little more conferencey, that's totally cool. And then you've got one to hang up on your wall of badges afterwards. You've got that option to do it too. I know Merle's going to do it because he can't help himself, and that's totally cool. Merle, we didn't do it just for you, but we know you're going to take
it. I'm so glad you did.
Yes.
I'm going to be right.
So, with that, have we missed anything that we absolutely positively should have mentioned about all of this? I don't think so, but I just wanted to.
I think we're right on target.
Yeah. It's like the drill sergeant at the rifle range, right? Any alibi fires. Doesn't sound like it. I think we're good. Again, we do have a discussion area opened up on the Armchair Dragoons forums if folks want to talk about this and discuss it. From the Dragoons point of view, Merle has already mentioned there is the Connections Facebook page that you've got the opportunity to be able to get engaged there. And so that's another place you can talk back to us if you're interested in interacting with the team as we're prepping for the conference in terms of getting involved. If you are interested in volunteering for subsequent Connections conventions, you can go ahead and send up a flare now, but be advised, we're probably not getting back to you until this one's done, other than to acknowledge that we saw your flare, simply because we've got too many cats left to herd to get ready for April.
But this is like Capone Chicago. There's enough for everybody. So If you're interested in the lease, let us know, and we will allow you to spend time with interesting and exciting people and talk about really cool subjects.
Plus me. So, all right, guys. Thank you very much, Chris. Appreciate it, especially since you didn't realize you'd been invited to tonight's conversation until this afternoon. So I'm glad you were reading your text messages. That was very cool.
Well, thank you for having me on the show again. I appreciate it. And thank you for everything that you and Merle are doing to make connections online happen, because I had a blueprint, but I didn't have the horsepower to do it all myself. And I also appreciate the fact that there's a couple of places where you guys have said, hey, you know, like, how about this other idea instead?
Yeah. Connections go.
Yep. And Merle, thank you for finally making it on a mention in dispatches, and we'll bring you back to talk about the NSDM sometime.
Oh, that's cool. Anytime it works.
Cool. And audience, thank you for joining us again for another great episode of Mention in Dispatches. We will catch you next time. Look, I've quit trying to remember what episode number we're on, in part because there's a couple of these we've recorded out of order from when we are releasing them. So thank you for enjoying the current episode of Mention in Dispatches, and we'll see you guys again on the next one.